Wealthy big game hunter Maston Thrust and a pretty young woman watch a film of his hunting conquests.
Oh, what an ugly alligator. Did you shoot that too?
It's not an alligator. It's a crocodile. And yes, I shot it. All right, Charlie, that's enough.
As the projector stops and the screen retracts into the ceiling, Maston selects a gun from a case nearby. He pats the mounted head of a Cape buffalo.
See that ram?
Then pokes the gun at a bighorn sheep trophy.
They said that was an endangered species. You know they're going to put cows on the loose next. Yep. You know what they're doing to Scotland? They have got a thing over there called Loch Ness Monster. They haven't found it yet, but it's already on the endangered species.
She strokes his hair.
You've done everything.
His face, lined and weather-beaten, Maston gazes at her solemnly.
No, maybe not everything.
Don't go away.
Maston steps across the room and picks up a photo album bound in zebra skin.
I'm out in front and see what the boys are doing.
He drops the album on a table.
Look at that, it might amuse you.
When he leaves the room, her gaze comes to rest on a copy of a magazine with Maston's picture on the cover. She picks up the photo album that lies beside it. The woman crosses the room, which is adorned with trophies of several other game animals, and sits down to look through Maston's album. Maston and the woman are flying aboard a Thrust Industries jetliner. The plane passes Mount Fuji in the distance. Inside the aircraft, the woman leafs through the album. Arthur Rankin Jr., Jules Bass film. The photos document Maston's lifetime of hunting. Richard Boone.
His time has passed. There are no more.
The Last Dinosaur.
The Last Dinosaur. You men have even tried.
Co-starring Joan Van Ark.
He has tried. Most men have failed.
Stephen Keats.
His time has passed. There are no more.
Luther Rackley.
He is the last dinosaur. The world holds nothing new in store.
Music by Maury Laws. Arranged and conducted by Ken Hughes. The Last Dinosaur title song, sung by Nancy Wilson. Music, Maury Laws. Lyrics, Jules Bass. Arranged and conducted by Bernard Hoffman. Associate producer, Benny Korsen. Special effects, Kazuo Segawa. Tsuburaya Productions producer, Noboru Tsuburaya. Screenplay by William Overgaard.
There are no more.
Produced by Arthur Rankin Jr. and Jules Bass.
He is the last dinosaur.
Directed by Alex Grassoff and Tom Catani. Later, the Thrust Industries plane taxis at an airport. Soon after, Maston and the woman disembark from the jetliner. The two step toward a limousine, but when they reach it, Maston stops.
Sorry, sugar. End of the line. I've got some other business to take care of.
Beg your pardon?
I guess a ticket back to wherever that was that I found you.
Portland.
Portland?
Shaking his head in amazement, he hands her a small box.
A token of my appreciation.
When she opens it, her smile vanishes.
What's this?
That's a solid gold bullet.
What am I supposed to do with this? I can't wear this.
Well, if times get really tough, you can bite on it. Excuse me.
He gets into the limousine and a chauffeur closes his door. Flabbergasted, she watches the limo pull away. Marston's limo pulls into a large complex of Thrust Industries offices, where several employees await his arrival. After greeting his staff, Marston strides into the building.
Right! The media are all here, Chief. The networks, the wire services, London, New York, the whole shit.
Go, Lakes.
We're Stonewall. All they know is that it's some kind of an expedition that's bigger than the moonwalk.
Mr. Frost?
A pretty blonde woman hurries after Marston.
Marston, this is...
Hi, I'm Francesca Banks.
Yeah, well, sugar, I'm not going to have time for you this trip, so you just give Barney your phone number, and I'll try and catch you the next time around. What the hell is the matter with you?
Marston walks away, leaving Francesca and his PR man behind.
I'm sorry. I don't think he understood.
No, I don't think he did.
Francesca stalks off. In a Thrust laboratory, huge sparks flash between two electrodes. Across the room, a technician looks on as a similar test is conducted.
Okay, that's good.
Marston enters the lab and bows to a Japanese scientist.
Oh, kuntoni o genki so de.
The two men hug each other.
This is Charles Wade. He was number two geologist for Polar Bear, Team 5.
Mr. Thrust?
Wade shakes hands with Marston.
Oh, you're the man.
Yes, sir.
Did you really see it?
I was observing from 500 yards, sir. There's no mistaking that species. I had a year of vertebrate paleontology.
Wait a minute. I don't want to hear your stats. I'm just trying to check your eyesight.
It'll be pretty hard to miss something that size, sir.
Marston nods.
All right, let's go. Marston, before we commit ourselves to the public, I must be so impolite as to restate my position and ask again for assurances that this effort will go forward in the interest of science.
I've told you all along.
Master, my friend, but I've seen those mounted animals that much like herds are around your game room walls.
That's it. You have my word. Then let us proceed.
The three men leave the lab and enter a television studio, where a crowd of journalists awaits their arrival.
All right, gentlemen. Lady, you have a little...
Francesca takes pictures.
Take your seat.
All right, right away. Have it. Now.
The journalists hurry to their seats.
As most of you know, we have been drilling successfully for oil under the polar cap. We've been using a manned laser drill.
He points to a model of a bullet-shaped capsule with screw-like grooves on its conical tip.
On June 2 this year, a very unique thing happened. Polar Bear 5, on a routine mission, disappeared off the monitor. There were 5 men on that expedition. There was 1 survivor. 1. Chuck Wade.
The cameras have now picked up Chuck Wade. He's the young geologist.
Everything was A-OK until the 5800 level.
From the initial 5
when our readouts ID that we were curving in an arc and angling up sharply. We received an affirmative that we had an abort situation, but before we could activate, we had a bore through.
Charles Wade is now giving the details of that first ill-fated
All the readouts
adventure.
Indicated that we were at sea level and in the water, but the temperature outside showed 90 plus.
A Soviet journalist frowns in disbelief.
Yet.
Wade is taken aback by the audience's skepticism.
Now let him talk!
We come up in a lake, and its curvature suggested that it might be the base of a volcano. The heat outside was terrific, but in the distance we could see ice cliffs.
This procedure produced a
It was decided to unbutton and go ashore,
laser beam
and as junior member of the team, I was to stay on board. They cast off at 0700 and made shore by 0710, and I watched them running samples through the glasses until 0730. Then I noticed something moving above the trees in the haze, an enormous animal. I shouted and I waved, but they didn't see it until it was too late, and then they were gone.
What do you mean they were gone?
Oh, you mean gone?
Oh,
you're gonna be kidding me.
I can't believe that.
By what, Mr. Thrust?
As far as we know, it was Tyrannosaurus Rex, the largest carnivore that ever lived. The king of the dinosaurs.
A film depicts the skeleton of a huge dinosaur with a mouth full of long, sharp teeth.
That film was taken in the New York Museum of Natural History. You can see from the skeleton how large that animal is. It's 20 feet high and 40 feet long. It weighs 8 tons. Yes. Prehistoric. And we are going to find it. Now! We are going to find that animal.
Sir, do you intend to kill that animal?
No, I don't intend to kill that animal. It will not be hunted. It will not be harmed. It will be studied, observed, and photographed. It will be treated exactly as Dr. Kawamoto has prescribed.
Who is going with you, sir?
Chuck Wade. One of you.
Maston gestures toward the journalist.
The eminent Dr. Kawamoto. In addition, I have brought along a Maasai tracker. He's probably the best in the world. He is my friend. His name is Bunta.
A very tall black man wearing a necklace of lion's teeth steps onto the set and gazes impassively at the journalists. When Maston steps off the set and tries to walk through the audience, he's mobbed. Maston's PR man pushes through the crowd with Francesca in tow.
Maston, this is Francesca Banks. She's the press representative who's going along with you.
Hello again.
Maston glowers at the PR man.
Crazy. No woman going on this trip.
But Maston, she was chosen by the press pool. It was unanimous.
Well, they will have to get ununanimous and unchoose her. Now, I've been going on safari most of my life. I have never taken a woman, and I'm not going to change now, Barney.
But Maston...
Maston stalks away.
Oh, Frankie, I'm sorry.
No, no, it's okay. My father was a great believer in the woman's place, and I've heard all this before.
Yeah, well, look, I've got to get over to the restaurant and make the arrangements for Maston's party. I'll tell you what I do. I'll give you a call next week. Okay? Ciao.
My father thinks that I could run for president now.
Huh? Oh, for president. Yeah, well, see you next week, eh? Ciao.
Later, at the restaurant, Maston's guests admire an ice sculpture of the drilling capsule.
Come on, you people. Let's have a few toasts.
Indeed.
Here's to a successful bore.
I went out with one like that last week.
Okay, boss, your turn.
All right. In the words of our eminent Nobel Prize winner, Dr. Kawamoto, Here's to a giant step backward for mankind.
I should like to offer a toast to those who support us.
Oh,
goodbye. Goodbye.
Goodbye. Come on, let's see.
A blonde geisha offers Maston a drink.
Dozo.
It's Francesca.
Champagne.
When Maston takes a glass from Francesca's tray, she walks away. Displeased, Maston turns to Barney, the PR man.
Maston, believe me, I had nothing to do with it. Believe me. Now, look, this girl is a great photographer, Maston. You've got to believe me. She's great. She's not just some poor little rich kid who's playing at being a photographer.
Barney, would you mind telling me what the hell she is doing over there right now?
Hidden behind a bush, Francesca takes off her kimono and flings it into the air. She pokes her hand over the top of the bush and waggles her fingers. When Francesca emerges from behind the bush, she's wearing a sexy negligee.
Well, she's mighty hard to stay mad at. I suppose I better go and offer my apologies.
As Maston leaves the restaurant, Barney addresses the guests.
Don't believe it! Maston is going to apologize! Come by!
Later, aboard the support ship.
Everything operational?
Yes, sir. We're locked in. Telling them.
Get in now. Put it in this girl and help me.
Dr. Kawamoto! Wait for me!
Francesca hurries toward Wade and Dr. Kawamoto.
Oh, let me tell you, I'm delighted you're accompanying us, Miss Banks.
Oh, thank you, Doctor. That's very sweet.
That goes for me, too. Well, I really don't know how you talk the old man into it.
Helen.
Soon after, Francesca bounds excitedly up a flight of stairs into a room filled with heavy equipment.
7 minutes go.
Carrying a crash helmet under her arm, she joins the rest of the crew members as they file down a staircase. They enter a huge chamber where the Polar Borer drilling capsule sits on a track in front of a massive hydraulic ram.
We have 5 minutes to go.
The crew members approach the capsule.
All right. Now, if anybody wants to quit, time is now. The last expedition, we lost 4 men. I will not risk 1 more man, 1 more life. And I just hope that's clear to everybody. Chuck?
Wade meets Maston's gaze.
Frankie?
Francesca nods.
I'm ready.
Doctor?
Kawamoto nods.
Bunta.
Bunta nods.
Control, take your positions. 4 minutes to go.
As the crew enters the capsule through a hatch, the expedition commander sits in a control room in another part of the ship.
Hatch secured.
Sitting at a large control panel, several technicians adjust their instruments.
We have 1 minute. All systems are ready. Counting down. 57.
Roger, confirm all systems ready.
54.
Roger, reactors firing.
52. 51.
Depth indicators activated.
49. Hydraulic ram operational.
The capsule moves forward along the rails.
43. 42. 41. 39. 38. 37.
As the countdown continues, the crew waits anxiously.
Stand by to open the airlock door.
A massive airlock door swings open, allowing the capsule to enter a steel tube.
19, 18, 17, 4 more entering airlocks. 16, 17, 12, 11, 10, 9, airlock door closing. Stand by for lock. 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
The capsule shot into the ocean.
All right, we have a goal.
now at 50 fathoms, approaching Earth entry.
Stand by to activate lasers. We are ready to activate. Do you read?
Affirmative, all systems go.
Stand by. Ready? Ignite.
A halo of laser light engulfs the capsule.
Marking.
The laser vaporizes the rock at the ocean bottom.
0 feet.
Inside the capsule.
All right, what's RSA?
Surface arrival estimated at 1200. That's 18.6 elapsed minutes.
Marvelous. An absolutely fantastic sensation. Like a roller coaster ride. What does it feel like to you, Doctor?
Preparing to level off at 4000 feet. Changing trajectory for target four through.
Roger, roger, standing by.
500 feet. 400 feet. Approaching board through. Stand by now. 05 04 03 02 01. Four through. Power off.
The capsule breaks through the bottom of a lake. It floats to the surface. A huge pterodactyl hovers above the lake, then flies away. Another cruises overhead, circling the capsule. When the capsule's hatch is thrown open, Maston sticks his head out and surveys the majestic peaks and forests that surround the lake.
All right, let's move it.
Soon after, Bunta and Chuck tow two inflatable rafts ashore with the crew and the gear aboard. Frankie takes photos of the beautiful Wilderness Valley. Bunta and Chuck help the other crew members ashore.
It's amazing! It must be 90 degrees and it's utterly beautiful.
We were right, Maston.
The volcano is superheating the water.
Yes, yes.
Glaciers, forests, like the beginning of time.
It's a little frightening. Everything seems kind of suspended.
What's that?
Did you hear that?
A grove of trees beside the lake quivers.
Sounds like it's getting louder.
Ground shaking. Is it an earthquake?
No, I've heard that sound before, and that is big game.
The dinosaur.
Maybe.
Can you see it?
Chuck peers through his binoculars.
I don't believe it.
A gigantic rhinoceros-like dinosaur emerges from the grove.
Three horny ridges and sharp tusks. That is one of the Ceratopsians.
The enormous beast snaps the trunks of dead trees like matchsticks.
Well, whatever the hell it is, I suggest we remove ourselves. That thing looks like it's going to need a lot of room. Come on!
Maston and the others leave the beach, but as the beast draws nearer, Frankie stays behind to shoot pictures. Chuck tries to pull Frankie away, but she ignores him and keeps taking pictures of the dinosaur as it thunders toward her.
Frankie, come on!
She ignores Maston.
Frankie!
Maston rushes onto the beach and shoves Frankie aside just before the huge creature can trample her. The two fall into a mud puddle. As the massive beast lumbers into the forest, Frankie stares at Maston's mud-caked face.
You are a crazy lady. You are absolutely crazy.
Well, I don't know what makes you say that.
Chuck runs toward them.
Just what do you think you're doing, huh? Playing chicken? You don't want another second, you could have been run down.
Take it easy.
Take it, look, we are not going to get very far in this expedition. The few two are going to have a contest to see who's going to get killed first.
And you are not going to get very far at all if you start popping off. Now break out the gear and let's set up the camp.
Later, they gather around a campfire.
Bunta.
Well, Bunta, as a matter of fact, is very articulate if you happen to speak his dialect.
What does his name Bunta mean?
Bunta means the owner of 100 wives and 1,000 head of cattle.
Does that mean that you get your choice either or...
As the others dive for cover, Bunta menaces a pterodactyl with a spear as it swoops past.
Bunta!
The explorers pick up their scattered equipment. High up in a tree, two primitive men look on. The next morning, as Maston crouches beside the lake, shaving, Kawamoto steps toward him.
Doc, I'd like you to stay in camp today. The rest of us are going to cut out and see if we can find that thing. I got a lot of things to set up.
Nearby, Frankie finishes taking pictures of Bunta.
Thanks, Winter.
Then approaches Maston.
When are we leaving?
Right about now.
He tosses Bunta a rifle.
What is the rifle for? I thought we weren't taking any weapons on the hunt.
I didn't say we weren't taking any weapons. I said the animal would not be hunted. But if we get in a jam...
Maston walks away from him with Bunta at his side. Chuck and Frankie follow Maston and Bunta away from the camp. Bunta slashes through the forest undergrowth with a machete as he leads the way through the woods. Frankie stumbles.
Are you all right?
Yeah, fine.
This place exceeds all of my expectations. I mean, all this unique flora, it's like a botanist's dream.
Okay, well, it may be to you, but to me, it's more like walking in the bottom of a salad bowl.
Chuck points at something in the distance.
Do you see that tree?
Yeah.
That is a Cretaceous cycad tree. That was thought to be extinct millions of years ago.
Frankie photographs the tree.
Imagine. We are the first humans to ever break a path here.
Chuck stumbles and falls, and Frankie crouches beside him.
This time I know you're right.
Their eyes meet.
Hey! Hey, come on!
What's that?
They hurry to catch up to Maston and Bunta.
Have you got anything?
Maston stands beside some dinosaur tracks in the soft ground beside a stream.
Well, there's some odd-looking spore back there, and then we ran into these.
The three-toed tracks are huge.
Do you know what you're looking at? It's the same animal that I saw with Polabora 5. Tyrannosaurus rex.
Well, looks impressive.
Paleontologists have called them the crown of creation, the king of the super tyrant lizards.
Well, that sounds real poetic. Tracks lead straight down that line.
Bunta!
They follow the tracks beside the stream. Frankie pauses to take a few pictures. Then hurries after the others. Frankie hops onto a large rock in the water and takes more photos. Until the rock begins to move under her feet. She's standing on the back of a giant turtle.
Help! Oh, it's moving! Oh, God!
Frankie steps off the turtle and wades toward shore as Chuck and Gunter rush to help her.
Sobbing wet. Sobbing wet.
Frankie pulls up a pant leg and sees two huge leeches on her calf.
Giant leeches.
Gunter crouches beside her.
What is he doing?
He's going to put salt on him. It'll be all right.
Please hurry.
Gunter pulls off the leeches.
It's all right. They're gone.
They stand.
I can take turtles as big as bathtubs and even dinosaurs. Leeches.
Chuck hugs him.
Come on, let's get moving. Holding you up.
Thank goodness.
As the three hasten after Maston, Frankie forgets her woven string bag beside the stream. A long-haired, primitive man dressed in a fur loincloth picks up the bag and sniffs it. A second man grabs the bag and handles it curiously. But the first takes it from him and throws it away. As the men stagger away from the bag, a primitive woman looks on, hidden in some bushes nearby. When the men have gone, she comes out of hiding and steps cautiously toward the bag. The woman picks up the bag and examines it. She glances around furtively, then hangs the bag around her neck and steps away. Frankie and Chuck sit on a log as Bunta hurries out of the woods and confers with Maston. Bunta points to a tall tree and lopes away toward it.
He says the spoor is fresh. That animal could be anywhere around here.
Is he going to climb that tree?
That's right.
Good shot.
She takes photos of Bunta as he climbs the tree. Perched high in the tree, Bunta surveys the forest that surrounds the explorers. Bunta spots a Tyrannosaurus emerging from cover nearby.
They are not going to believe.
The beast steps towards Bunta, who's still high on the tree.
It almost got him.
Bunta, jump! Jump! Come on, Bunta! Come on!
Bunta climbs down hastily.
Get back! Get back!
As Bunta reaches Maston, Frankie and Chuck run away. Maston takes aim at the dinosaur.
Now come to me.
The massive beast advances toward him.
Come on! Come to me!
He's not gonna shoot it. Maston, wait! Don't shoot!
Maston's shot hits the Tyrannosaurus, but it keeps on coming. Chuck drags Frankie away. Maston has no time for a second shot, so he rushes after the others. Bunta stops and prepares to throw a spear, then thinks better of it and runs away. As the explorers flee into the woods, the dinosaur chases them. The enraged beast tramples trees as it crashes through the forest. Just ahead, a river blocks the explorers' escape route.
A bad dramatic move.
An estimated 3 miles, 4 miles an hour.
Never make it cross. Stop it here.
What do you mean, stop it?
Stop it. I've been killed.
He chambers a bullet.
Get down.
Hunter approaches the dinosaur from another direction. Maston tries to get a clear shot.
Stand still!
Bunta charges the beast with his spear.
Bunta!
Maston waves his arms.
Get out of here! Come on!
Chuck drags Frankie into the river.
Come on! Come to me! Come on! Come on!
Maston raises his rifle to his shoulder.
Bunta! Bunta, the damn thing is jammed!
Maston tosses the rifle away.
Come on, Bunta!
Maston heads for the river, but Bunta remains behind and threatens the Tyrannosaurus with his spear.
Bunta!
He's going to try to spear him!
I don't believe it.
Bunta hurls the spear at the beast and wounds it in the chest. The animal seizes the spear in its teeth and snaps it like a twig. The dinosaur swings its long, massive tail at Bunta and narrowly misses him. Bunta wades across the river toward the others. When the beast retreats into the forest...
Bunta turned him.
He's got the spear stuck in it.
If you hadn't yelled back there and spoiled my first shot, we would have had him.
But, Maston, you told me. You swore to all of us that we were not going to harm the dinosaur. We were only supposed to take film and study it.
You ding-dong! We were about to get killed over there!
Oh, I see. I see it very clearly now. You intended to kill that dinosaur all along. To add it to your collection of stuffed animals.
Oh, shut up. Maybe I did lose my temper over there. I was going on blind instinct, but I gave Dr. Kawamoto my word, and I will keep it. Now let's go.
With Maston in the lead, they head off along the riverbank. On the opposite bank, the rifle lies on the ground in one of the beast's enormous footprints. Several primitive men emerge from cover nearby and step toward the weapon. The leader throws down a wooden spear, picks up the rifle, and inspects it. As the woman who took Frankie's bag looks on, the leader breaks off the rifle's telescopic sight. The leader throws down the rifle. The band of men head back toward the forest, but the woman remains behind. When the men disappear into the woods, the woman picks up the telescopic sight and puts it into Frankie's bag. Later, the lush tropical forest is calm. Nearby, the Tyrannosaurus feeds in a stream. It grabs a big fish in its massive jaws. The dinosaur surveys the surrounding forest. As it peers over some trees, the beast sees Dr. Kawamoto in the explorer's camp. It watches him wander toward the forest. Dr. Kawamoto stops to examine a fungus. Looking over his shoulder, he sees the beast towering above him. It crushes him with its enormous foot. Later, the camp lies in ruins, with mangled supplies and equipment strewn everywhere. The dinosaur's tracks marked the ground along the beach, heading away from the wreckage. On the far side of the lake, the Tyrannosaurus has found the Polar Borer capsule. It struggles to seize the bobbing cylinder in its mouth. It lifts the capsule high into the air and flings it ashore with a mighty heave. The capsule caroms off some rocks. Then comes to rest. As a pterodactyl soars high overhead, the beast wades toward the capsule. Piles of bones litter the ground nearby. The dinosaur hurls the capsule further inshore. When the capsule comes to rest, the dinosaur steps toward it. Lowering its huge head, the Tyrannosaurus nudges the capsule along the ground. The capsule gouges into a mound of earth and awakens another animal sleeping there. Unaware that it has disturbed another dinosaur, the Tyrannosaurus works to bury the capsule. Enraged at the intrusion, the second dinosaur, a Triceratops, charges the Tyrannosaurus. It has two long, sharp horns on its forehead and a large, bony shield around its head to protect its neck. The two massive dinosaurs begin to fight. The Tyrannosaurus tries to bite the Triceratops, but can't get a grip on it. The Triceratops charges and sinks its horns into the Tyrannosaurus. The Triceratops bites the Tyrannosaurus's leg. The Tyrannosaurus bites the Triceratops' neck, but is shaken off, and the two beasts continue sparring. The Tyrannosaurus knocks the Triceratops down, then rakes it with its huge clawed foot. The Tyrannosaurus sinks its fangs into the adversary's neck and tears at its flesh. The Tyrannosaurus backs away from the wounded Triceratops, which tries to get away. As the Tyrannosaurus looks on, its jaws dripping with blood, the Triceratops collapses and dies. The explorers return to their devastated camp. They stare at the wreckage in shock.
What?
You're wasting your breath. Tracks all over the place. Look at it.
Frankie picks up a smashed camera.
Mm-hmm. That's it. This animal, this 8-ton animal, is a carnivore. It eats meat. Us. This 40-foot monster with a brain the size of a dried pea has just destroyed a man with one of the great minds of this century.
He flings aside a piece of wreckage.
That is its fifth victim. And I tell you this, it is the last. I will hunt that thing down and I will kill it.
What? All our equipment, everything is
destroyed. Then I will have to make a weapon. And by God, I will not leave here until I have destroyed that thing.
It's gone. The carnivore is gone.
But that's not possible. Where could it go?
I suppose it must have been curious because it was shiny. Out there and sunk it.
Well, what happens now? How do we get back? Well, surely when they don't hear from us, they'll send rescue teams.
No. No, they won't. I told them that if we weren't back in 5 days, if they didn't hear from us, under no conditions were they to risk one more man or one more life. And they won't.
That's not possible. That means that we'd have to stay here until... That can't be.
Maston won't meet her gaze.
Chuck, that can't be. There must be some way.
Chuck ignores her. She looks again at Maston, who stares at the horizon. Frankie is overcome with anguish. Maston lays a comforting hand on her shoulder, and they all stare at the gloomy mist that has blanketed the valley. Meanwhile, aboard the support ship...
No readbacks.
What about the sensors?
They're not good. They keep indicating sand, dry sand.
You mean the bores out of the water?
That's what it reads. We're rerunning all of the tapes. The incredible thing is the sensors also show the presence of bone.
Bone.
Much later, in the valley, a band of primitive men pelt the male explorers with rocks as they try to steal a rabbit. When Bunta steps toward them, the band retreats with the rabbit.
Damn! You notice anything different?
What are you talking about?
All carrying pointed sticks.
Later, in front of a cave, Frankie carries a pot toward a fire as the men return from their hunt.
Well, there it is. Second straight day and no game.
We've hunted the area out. We gotta move on.
Chuck, if we leave the sanctuary of that cave at night, that tribe out there is gonna pick us off like that. We've gotta find some way to drive them out for good.
Oh, yeah? How? There's going to be easily 20 or 30 of them.
We got to have a weapon of some kind.
Oh, sure. Why don't we get ourselves a bazooka and maybe a Minuteman missile?
No. But maybe I've got something almost as good.
Oh, like what?
Well, let me finish it first. I've been messing around with some of that debris that was left over after Kawamoto was killed.
Well, good luck to you.
Chuck drops his metal shield. then sits beside the fire, exhausted.
I hope you've got something.
You kidding? We're lucky we got back ourselves.
Then you didn't? What happened?
How long have we been here, huh? 2 months? Three?
No, almost four.
Seems like 4 years.
Yeah, I know. Well, come on, what happened?
She snaps off plant stems and throws them into a bowl.
I remember in the beginning how... how the savages, they were afraid of us. I mean, they wouldn't even come near us, remember?
Yeah.
Well, we started leaving parts of the kill that we didn't want. That's where we made our mistake. Now they fight us for the game. It's like having a pack of jackals constantly at your feet.
Well, if they're human, why can't you make contact with them? Try to be friendly instead of fighting.
Sweetheart, they are some spin-off of Robustus, earliest known man.
Yeah, well, you can tame wild animals. Why not them?
Yeah, have you ever heard of anybody attempting to tame an adult male baboon? They're naturally vicious.
He throws wood on the fire.
Lucky all they got was just the rabbit.
Well, then we better send out to the local deli, because what's left in that pot is not going to last us for another meal.
No. We have to move on and find more game. They're constantly harassing us. It's too dangerous to travel far.
What do you mean? You've got weapons. You've got knives and spears.
We need a rifle, a pistol.
Do you realize what we're doing? We are sitting here and we are calmly discussing murder.
Well, I'm afraid that it's come down to that. Because if we don't break out of there and get something to eat, we are going to get weaker and weaker. And one morning we're going to wake up to the sound of heads being cracked open. Ours.
I think it's horrible having to kill each other to survive.
Would you just knock it off? If we don't kill, we don't survive. You're the one who's always complaining all the time when we come back from the hunt without any fresh meat. You know, you're beginning to sound like a shrew housewife.
Now, I just wonder why that is. Maybe it's because I'm the one who has to butcher all your bloody kills, and I'm the one who does all the cooking, and I'm the one who...
Why don't you just shut up, huh?
Why don't you just make me?
She stares at him. Suddenly, he pulls her toward him. And they kiss passionately.
What's that?
Inside the cave, Maston frowns disapprovingly at Chuck and Frankie. Frankie approaches Maston.
What are you doing?
Question, crazy lady. What are you doing? All those years, I never took one on the safari. Probably should have stuck with the rules. It's all right. Get some sleep.
Saddened, she watches Maston step away into the cave. Frankie walks back to the fire, but keeps away from Chuck.
Francesca.
Good night, Chuck.
Mystified at her change of heart, Chuck rolls over. Troubled and conflicted, Frankie fights back tears. The next day, inside the cave, Maston hammers a strip of metal with a rock. As Maston holds the metal, Bunta pounds on it with a stone axe. Outside, Chuck is fast asleep, but Frankie is awake and peering over some rocks at something that's caught her attention. The tribe of primitive people is creeping toward the cave. Frankie hurries to Chuck's side.
Chuck, wake up. Look over there.
Huh?
He sees the advancing tribe.
They've never come that close before.
Maston emerges from the cave carrying a makeshift crossbow.
What is that thing?
It's a crossbow.
Chuck inspects the bow, then pulls back the string on the heavy wooden shaft.
We got lucky on the bow itself. There was a piece of spring steel down there.
You made this from the bits and pieces of Dr. Kawamoto's stuff? What are you using for arrows?
I made them out of stainless steel tent pegs. Bolts.
You think it'll work?
Well, let's go find out.
Hey. This is for good luck.
She ties her scarf around Maston's arm, then gives him a kiss on the cheek. With Chuck and Borta holding wooden spears and Maston carrying the crossbow, the three men advance toward the tribe. When Maston puts down his metal shield, the leader of the tribe stares at him, uncertain. Maston steps toward the tribe with the crossbow. Sensing a threat, the leader jumps up and down, and the others follow suit. Maston calmly prepares to fire the crossbow. The tribe hurls rocks at the three explorers. Maston shoots and hits the leader in the heart, and the man stares at the shaft in disbelief. The leader drops his spear, then falls dead. Fearful, three tribe members edge toward their leader's body. They see the metal shaft in his chest, but are afraid to touch it. Maston levels the crossbow at the tribe again. The tribe backs away in fright. In a headlong rush, the tribe runs away.
Well, it looks like they got the message.
Yeah, unreasoning fear. They don't understand it, but one thing is clear. We can make them dead.
The three return to the cave, but don't see that the woman who took Frankie's things has stayed behind. Later, snow flies as the explorers huddle together high on a hillside.
How can it be 90 degrees down there and absolutely freezing up here? Huh? All right, answer me this, then. If we're right on the edge of the glacier, why can't we climb the dumb thing and set off in the direction of land?
If we climbed to the top, do you know where we'd be?
Well, all right, come on, tell me.
We'd be in the middle of the polar ice cap, thousands of miles from even the most remote village. Then we...
Hearing a noise, Maston aims the crossbow.
There's something down there.
It's the woman from the tribe.
Would you look at that? She's got my bag.
God, I thought we'd saw the last of them.
No. Don't kill her. She's not doing anything. She's probably just hungry. Here.
She throws the woman some meat. The woman pounces on the food, then retreats behind a rock and eats ravenously.
See? She was hungry.
Another day, the men return from a hunt with plenty of game. And find Frankie and the woman beside a campfire.
What are you two ladies up to, huh?
I'm going to teach you how to cook the chicken.
Oh, fantastic. Next thing you know, she's going to be doing gourmet meals, huh?
All right, come on. Don't laugh. Now, look, she's smart. She's learned a lot already. Remember you said that they were unteachable?
You know what Nez has done? She has just invented the first domestic service. The first... ladies, me.
Hey, Meg, wait a minute. Maybe we should call her Hazel.
All right, you fellas, pluck.
Frankie throws a dead chicken at Maston, and the explorers play a game of catch with him.
There.
Later, Frankie kneels beside the lake alone, washing her hair. Hearing a noise, Frankie looks up.
Hazel, you scared me.
Hazel, the primitive woman, stands beside Frankie, smiling.
Here, come, sit, down.
Hazel picks up a hairbrush.
Brush.
Frankie shows her how to use the brush.
Brush. Brush. Okay, you help me. You help me, okay? Here. What? Help me. You help me.
Hazel uses a metal pan to scoop up lake water and rinse Frankie's hair.
Good. More. More, Hazel. Good. More. Good. More, Hazel.
Hazel stares at a reflection in the pan of water and freezes.
Come on.
Looking up,
Hazel.
She sees the Tyrannosaurus. Frankie rushes away along the beach, but Hazel runs into the lake. When Frankie tries to escape inland from the beach, the dinosaur cuts her off. Paralyzed with fear, Frankie confronts the huge beast. Frankie darts between the dinosaur's legs and sprints into the woods. The lumbering beast turns to follow her. And Frankie runs for her life. Frankie races uphill, and the Tyrannosaurus follows. With the dinosaur close behind, Frankie rushes toward the cave. Reaching the cave, she hurries inside. The beast thrusts its massive head into the cave and tries to grab Frankie in its jaws, but the opening is too narrow. Frankie huddles at the back of the cave, terrified. Meanwhile, Maston, Bunta, and Chuck hear the roaring in the distance.
That's coming from the cave.
They run toward the noise. When they can see the dinosaur, the men stop to size up the situation.
It's Frankie. Do you think it's...
No! Wouldn't still be hanging around.
Can it get in?
Well, it looks like the head is too big. It's gonna be all right for a while.
For a while? What are you talking about? Let's go in there and
watch! This is no good!
We have to do something.
Its huge tail flails in the air.
Bunta! To get me 200 yards of tough mine.
Bunta hurries away. Meanwhile, in the cave, Frankie shrinks away from the creature's snapping jaws. Soon after, the men tie thick lengths of vine together. Crouched low, the men carry the vine toward the dinosaur. When it looks at them, they freeze. And it turns back toward the cave. Still some distance away, the men tie the vine around a huge boulder. rushes toward the dinosaur with the other end of the vine. As Bunt draws near, the beast looks up for a moment, then turns back to the cave. Bunta crouches behind the dinosaur. As the animal's tail swings through the air, Bunta ducks to avoid it. Bunta lassoes the creature's tail. The beast turns around, but sees nothing amiss. Bunta sprints back to Maston and Chuck. The men wave their arms to attract the Tyrannosaurus, then hurry away. The dinosaur chases after them. The beast starts down a hill after the men. Partway down the hill, the vine is drawn taut around the dinosaur's tail, and it stops. When the Tyrannosaurus lunges forward, the huge boulder begins rolling down the hill toward it. Picking up speed, the boulder rolls past the dinosaur with the vine still attached. The vine yanks the dinosaur off its feet, and it tumbles downhill after the boulder. As Maston watches awestruck, the beast crashes into a river at the bottom of the hill. The dinosaur gets to its feet, glances back for a moment, then walks away into the forest, dragging the boulder behind it. Maston gives Bunta an appreciative clap on the arm, then hurries up the hill after Chuck. Inside the cave,
Frankie
is in shock.
Frankie!
When she hears Chuck approaching, she runs out to meet him.
Are you all right? Huh?
Oh, it was awful.
She runs into his arms.
Shh. Everything's all right.
No.
It's all over.
Shh. Easy. Easy. Okay. Well, it ought to be fairly easy to follow from here.
Follow it? What are you talking about?
Oh, I'm talking about going after it.
Are you crazy? You said yourself our weapons are useless against that thing. Leave it alone.
It will not leave us alone. It will continue to plague us until we are chewed and swallowed and dissolved. And I am not ready for that. I'm going to take it first.
How are we going to do that?
I don't know. But I'll do it.
Hazel arrives.
Maston, we're exhausted.
You don't hear very good. Now get it together now.
As Chuck glares at him sullenly, Maston steps toward Hazel.
Get out of my way! Now!
As Hazel cowers in fear, Frankie hurries to her side. Later, with Maston in the lead, the explorers follow the dinosaur's trail. Entering a clearing in the forest, they find the boulder that was tied to the beast's tail.
All right. That thing has been through here, and this place is perfect for our purpose.
Purpose? What purpose? What are you talking about?
Well, if the thing gets in here again, it's going to be trapped.
Oh, it's
gonna see traps.
Now, the only thing that will stop an animal that size is a missile.
And, how do you propose to do that?
The same way it's been done for centuries, with a catapult.
Soon after, Chuck and the others chop down trees and gather materials to build the catapult. High in a tree, Hazel throws a vine down to Frankie. Later, Chuck strings some thick vines between trees in the clearing. Bunta and Maston cut holes in the ends of gourds. Soon after, Chuck and Bunta build the catapult with heavy logs. Maston helps Chuck with a heavy wooden gear assembly that will draw back the catapult's throwing arm.
A little more.
Okay.
A little more. Okay.
Frankie and Chuck affix the heavy vine that links the throwing arm to the gear assembly. Chuck and Bunta strain to draw the throwing arm. Meanwhile, Maston looks through the rifle sight to ensure that the catapult is aimed properly. Bunta and Chuck struggle to lift a large boulder into the throwing arm's pocket.
All right, let's run through it again. That animal's going to come down that gorge. It's going to hit those vines. His head's going to be 20 feet high. He's 75 yards away. When those vines stop him for 1 minute. Whack!
Yeah, but after all of this, what happens when he doesn't show up?
Well, he'll show up. We got the best bait in the world.
Really? What's that?
Us.
Later, Maston hangs a reflective metal panel in a tree beside the vines in front of the gorge. Beside the catapult,
hey.
Chuck walks off carrying a spear.
Why aren't Maston and Bunta going with you?
Bunta is up the trail waiting for our guests to arrive.
Yeah, and what about Maston?
Chuck stares at her, then turns away.
Chuck, I'm worried about him. All he seems to think about is killing that animal. He's beginning to scare me.
Well, you have every right to be, because it's become an obsession with him. Maybe if he can kill the damn thing and get it over with, he'll come around.
Concerned, Frankie watches Chuck enter the forest. Later, Chuck treads nervously through the woods. Soon after, Chuck arrives at a ledge, overlooking the bone pit where the Tyrannosaurus tried to bury the capsule. The capsule is below him, but he can't see it. When Chuck accidentally kicks a stone over the edge, it hits the capsule. Chuck looks toward the sound. Later, at the catapult, the women wash dishes together. Chuck dashes toward them, grinning excitedly.
What the hell is the matter with him?
I don't know.
I found it! I found it! We're leaving!
What are you talking about?
The polar bearer!
I found it! It's not 2 miles from here.
Does it still run?
Well, look, it needs a little work. I'll get that thing running. I promise you that. I just hope they're still monitoring us, that's all. Well, come on. What are we waiting for? Let's go. Let's get packed. We can camp on the spot. We'll have it launched in a couple of days.
Maston frowns.
Now!
Chuck stares at him, astounded.
What do you mean, now?
No. You understand, no? First, we get the dinosaur. Then we talk about leaving.
Out of your mind? Huh? What difference does it make now? We have a chance to leave. Forget the damn thing. We are going.
Since when are you calling the shots? You work for me.
That was a long time ago, Maston. We have a chance to go back, and we are going. That is our decision.
Maston, please. You know that that animal will kill us all if we stay.
Forget it, Frankie. The man can't even hear you.
Chuck and Frankie pick up their things and head out. Then pause and look at Bunta.
Bunta?
Bunta gazes at them thoughtfully. When he steps toward Maston, Chuck and Frankie hurry away. Maston aims his crossbow at Frankie and Chuck, but when Bunta restrains him, he drops the bow to his side. Maston throws the crossbow to the ground, then spitefully chases Hazel away. Terrified, she runs into the forest. Maston kicks a wooden tripod away from the campfire. Later, as Frankie sprawls on the ground, exhausted, Chuck struggles to move the capsule toward the lake on wooden rollers. Chuck uses a wooden lever to muscle the capsule toward the water. The polar borer slides into the lake.
It's large! It's large! It's large!
Did you expect me to crack open a bottle of champagne? Forget it.
Later, Chuck repairs some wiring inside the capsule. The cabin lighting comes on. Chuck tries some switches on a console and activates the instrumentation. As Frankie prepares a meal on the beach nearby, Chuck continues testing the instruments and sighs with relief. He steps through the cramped capsule toward the hatch. Chuck emerges from the capsule and sees Frankie tending a campfire on shore.
Francesca! All the readouts are functioning. So far, though, I haven't been able to reach Mother One. They could have stopped monitoring us after the 90-day cutoff, but I just can't believe that they would have done that.
Chuck, please, in English, when can we leave?
I gotta check out a couple of more circuits. It'll be a few more hours.
Good, then that'll give us time to say goodbye to Maston.
What?
Chuck scrambles off the capsule.
To hell with Maston! If he had his way, we'd be here forever! He likes this life! He is more primitive than that Robustus tribe.
I know. But we've got to give him one more chance to come back with us. I mean, we've been here for 3 days. Maybe he's changed his mind.
If he did, he could have come down here any time he wanted to. You said it yourself. The man is going over the edge. Who knows what he'll try to do if we go back there and start arguing with him?
I don't care. We have got to do it. After After all we've been through, I'd like to think that we're still civilized enough to be compassionate.
Well, I've got to stay here and monitor the circuits.
All right, all right. You stay here, then. I'm going.
She walks away.
If you're not back within an hour, I'm coming to get you.
Aboard Mother One, the support ship, the expedition captain walks into a control room where an operator is monitoring a radio.
And the board of directors refuses to hear any further appeals. We're going to stand by Maston's orders. So at 0800 tomorrow, Mother One will move on to new fields of exploration.
Do you think they're still alive?
How long have they got?
6 hours.
Meanwhile, Maston broods beside the catapult. In the forest, Bunta's acute hearing warns him of danger. He puts his ear to the ground and listens. Bunta gets to his feet and walks through the dense undergrowth. Looking up, Bunta sees the Tyrannosaurus. He throws his spear, but misses. When the beast lunges at him, he's defenseless. Soon after, Bunta's lion's tooth necklace lies crushed in one of the dinosaur's footprints. Back in the clearing, Maston warms himself beside the campfire. Then aims the crossbow.
Who's out there?
It's Frankie.
Hold it!
She stops dead in their tracks.
It's me, Maston.
Get away from my camp. I told you to stay the hell away from me.
When he turns his back on her, she steps toward him.
Maston? We have the polar bear launched. I want you to come back with us.
I got a better idea. You stay here with me.
She smiles at him.
I like that idea. Adam and Eve. Now, you tell me the truth. What's back there for you? Confusion? Frustration? Where life is. Pure. Simple.
She gazes at him tenderly.
Oh, we could make love. And we could hunt. And what the hell else is there?
Oh, it's a marvelous dream, but not here. You don't belong here. You come back with me now. And I'll gladly be your Eve. Anywhere in the world.
Oh, I believe you would. Crazy lady.
He caresses her cheek. And they kiss. She looks over his shoulder toward the vines.
Maston!
The dinosaur stands in front of the vines that are strung through the trees. Maston and Frankie rush toward the cap. With his hand on the catapult trigger, Maston watches the beast intently as it advances, snapping the vines. As the dinosaur chews through more vines, Maston waits for the right moment to fire. Paralyzed with terror, Frankie crouches behind the catapult as the massive animal plods toward them. Maston fires the catapult, and the heavy rock hurtles through the air. The rock hits the dinosaur in the head. The beast reels, but stays on its feet. The creature topples to the ground in a huge cloud of dust.
Did you kill it?
Don't know.
Can't see anything moving out there.
The Tyrannosaurus gets to its feet. The creature advances toward Maston and Frankie. Frankie runs into the forest, but Maston stands his ground and hurls homemade grenades at the beast. The dinosaur keeps on coming. Maston throws another grenade. The creature advances. Cowering inside a log shelter nearby, Frankie watches Maston hurl another grenade at the beast. Another grenade flies through the air. Maston takes cover in the shelter with Frankie. The dinosaur demolishes the catapult. The Tyrannosaurus steps toward the shelter and stomps on it. As Frankie and Maston cringe inside, the creature stomps again, but the shelter holds. Later, when the beast has gone, Maston and Frankie examine the wreckage of the catapult. Chuck runs out of the woods toward them.
Frankie! Are you all right?
Yes!
Frankie, we have to leave now! There's only enough juice in the batteries for one more run through.
Frankie looks at Maston imploringly.
If we don't leave now, we blow it. This is our last chance.
I know. Maston, please. And you've done all anyone could, and you were just magnificent. But please, let the dinosaur go. Let it be. It's the last one.
Maston ponders her words. He turns his back on her.
Frankie!
All right!
Frankie sprints across the clearing toward Chuck. And the two run into the forest. Ignoring their departure, Maston stands with his back turned. Chuck and Frankie race toward the capsule.
Oh, wait! Please! I've got to run.
Chuck helps her to run onward. Aboard Mother One, the ship's captain paces impatiently.
Okay, Al. Time's up. I request permission to get underway.
Al, the expedition captain, monitors a control panel and sighs reluctantly.
Permission granted.
Below, Frankie and Chuck dash across the beach to the capsule. On the surface...
Pass the order to raise anchors, Chief.
Al initials a logbook nearby.
I'm getting a signal, sir.
Al grabs the technician's headphones and listens.
Captain, hold it! Hold it!
Maston gives Frankie a grudging smile as she ducks into the capsule. The polar borer moves slowly across the water. As Maston looks on, the capsule sails away. A pterodactyl slowly flaps its giant wings, soaring high above. The capsule submerges. Alone, Maston ponders for a moment, then heads off toward the forest, crossbow in hand. Hazel creeps out from behind a tree and timidly watches Maston as he walks toward her. When Maston sees her, the eyes are baleful. Hazel backs away uncertainly. Maston stares at her and reflects. His glare softens, and when he walks away, Hazel follows him. This described version of The Last Dinosaur was created by Audiovision Canada. The narrative description was written by Peter Agnes, narrated by George Thompson, and produced by Valerie Hunter. Cast: Richard Boone as Maston, Joan Van Ark as Frankie, Stephen Keats as Chuck, Luther Rackley as Bunta, Tetsu Nakamura as Dr. Kawamoto, Masumi Sakia as Hazel. For information on other described movies and audio cinema presentations available from Audiovision Canada, call toll-free 1-800-567-6755.